Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am John Ledger. Trevor Sikkema is your other co-host, your more esteemed co-host. And Trevor, for the first time with the two of us doing this podcast, we can officially kick off post-NFL season, post-NFL postseason, draft season is underway for the Locked On NFL Draft. Doesn't it feel... It feels freaking good, especially to end the season on a game like that. I mean, that was an unbelievable game.
That was a really good game.
It was probably one of the best football games I've ever seen. I mean, like the back and forth and like the storylines.
I mean, like,
and
zero defense.
Oh, zero, yeah. But
it was basically, you know, the Big 12 of Super Bowls.
No, yeah. But that was, that made it fun.
I mean, yeah, no question.
And defensive splash plays were still, you still saw some. The Brandon Graham strip sack won the game.
But I think we're gonna see more Super Bowls be like that, man.
Probably.
We're just like, it's, everybody loves to talk about how defense wins championships. And I know, like, the Broncos, the Seahawks as of late, even the Patriots when they won, the Ravens when they won. Like, I get it. The defense was able to outperform and things like that. But it's a new age of football. Like, defense winning championships doesn't necessarily mean the same thing as it did when we kind of came up with that phrase and like adopted it really in like the early 2000s, you know? So yep. I tweeted last night, offensive play calling wins championships.
Oh, now, was that was more evident this season than ever before, right?
Yeah.
Offensive scheme design and coaching. It's huge. It's never been more important. And the NFL's starting to adapt to some of those philosophies that a couple years ago, everybody kind of laughed at.
Right,
you know,
right.
college schematics or whatever, but
I think defensive coaches are a little bit more stubborn than offensive coaches with the new age of college football players, because they're not, a lot of these times they're just not these hulking big dudes who are just like straight tackling linebackers or just big run stuffing defensive linemen or like strictly hard hitting safeties or like something. Like, a lot of these times these are hybrid guys, and athleticism is a big part of that, and they're smaller, they move better, so you got to figure out how to use it. And it's the same thing with offense, but I think we're seeing defense be a little bit more stubborn, like, no, that's not how the NFL works. Well, it's gonna turn into how the NFL works, you know?
Yeah,
that's all
I think
you can take.
It's a mix for me, because I think some defenses understand it really well, like Atlanta clearly, and they their linebackers are 220 pounds, they don't care. You know,
right,
like that's
right.
The Steelers have done that with team speed, and other elements are lacking in different places. But you have seen a lot of teams shift that. But the Patriots are one that I think you're kind of right. I don't think they shifted strong enough. You know, Patrick Chung having a player like that, sure, that's helped. You having a little bit of a linebacker safety hybrid, but even he's not a great athlete. You could see lack of athleticism showed up for the Patriots, I thought, all over the field. One of the gazillion fascinating stories. I mean, the storylines were unbelievable, from Doug Peterson and Frank Reich being backup quarterbacks in the NFL their whole careers and behind, you know, high quality elite starters, and, you know, being able to take a guy like Carson Wentz, who was the league MVP, gets hurt, and you take, you know, a Nick Foles, you know, a cast off, he thought about quitting and everything, and turning him into a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I mean, that's why we watch football. Like, that's why we love football, because of stuff like that, man. And the Eagles had like 10 of those storylines. I mean, like Aaron Blunt and Chris Long, you know, coming back, and Long waits his whole career to play in a playoff game, right? And then comes out and wins back-to-back Super Bowls in the twilight of his career. I mean, just an awesome, just so many awesome stories. It was an awesome season. To be honest, I know it didn't go the way the Steelers fans hoped it would, and, you know, that's my people, and the Bucs fans hoped it would, and that's your people. But, like, if we put our fan base biases aside, this season was unbelievable. In terms of action, the postseason was crazy.
It was fun.
Unpredictable. It was a great time. But
yep, I'm with you.
The NFL draft is where we focus our attention now. And that is good news for us, because we're, you know, we've been quoted by other people, of course, as being experts in this area. I think that's probably pretty accurate. Experts in the NFL draft arena. We've got to focus on team needs and offseason outlooks, though. So we are going to take this from an NFL team perspective, kind of, but as we do that, we'll look at it with a draft focus as well. So the Browns first up overall, obviously picking first overall. We're doing four teams every day. The Browns pick first and fourth, so we're just going to tackle both of them as we talk about it here. We've already discussed a good bit about what they should do with first and fourth overall picks, but it's hard to get away from the fact that the Browns have a screaming, crying need at quarterback, and the offseason storyline around them is going to be, how they address that position, because it's obviously the biggest need on the team. It's been the biggest need forever. They've probably never been as well equipped to be able to address the position as they are right now. They have a gazillion dollars in salary cap space. They can sign people. It is a great free agent, you know, for as good as free agency gets in quarterback position. It's a great crop out there. They have the means to be able to sign anybody they want. They have the means to be able to draft anybody they want. It's a can't lose situation for Cleveland, right? But we've seen them kind of lose in these spots before at the same time.
Yeah, it's, I guess it really depends, because I almost want to say, like, it's a little bit more stressful having two picks right there at 1 and 4, because you can't blow it. No. Like, this is what you traded back for. Like, this is why you acquired these picks. Like, this is the time you can. And they're coming off back-to-back seasons when, honestly, they could have very well have been 0-32 going into this draft, man. I mean, instead they're 1-31, so it's not like it's that much better. But you have Myles Garrett last year. Like, you were able to get Njoku. You got yourself Jabril Peppers. Like, you've been picking these pretty talented players, but, like, it's got to continue. Whatever your needs are, you've got to get good football players on that team. And even more than that, you've got to get the most out of them. And I know, like, obviously we're talking about the draft, we're talking about what their needs are, who they're going to select, but, man, the Browns, more than any other team, has to start getting the most out of their players, because it has just been a plagued franchise of getting the least out of their players for the longest time. And they're going to have an opportunity, like you just said, they're in really good shape to address some big needs and some important needs on this team, and it's going to be important for them to get the most out of them, I think.
I mean, they have nobody to worry about in free agency. Isaiah Crowell is a free agent, and they have three other free agents on their roster. I mean, they have nobody hitting free agency that matters. So, you know, Crowell, they've needed to move on from him for a while. Hopefully they wise up and are able to do that. Next year, Joe Thomas, Jason McCourty are both free agents. But at that point, Joe Thomas will be 35 years old. Jason McCourty will be 32. And, you know, his level of play went back up this year. I just don't think that lasts for him. I mean, there's nobody. Duke Johnson will be a free agent in 2 years. A good player, a replaceable kind of player. You know, all the core pieces that the Browns hope to build around on this roster, they're all going to be in place. So what they've got to do now is they've got to figure out and they've got to address, how do we build around the pieces that we have? Kind of, you know, how do we build for the future, you know, and make progress at the same time? So it's kind of like they have to win something now, but they don't have to win everything now, you know. But you mentioned draft history with this team. I mean, the past and not wasting opportunities, I mean, that's happened over and over and over again. So last year's group, we can't really tell that much from yet, but Corey Coleman was the first round pick in 2016. He has done nothing. He's been hurt a lot, but he's done nothing since when he's been out on the field. Danny Shelton in 2015 was their first pick, the 12th pick overall. Honestly, might be their best pick in their recent first-round crop. I mean, and he's just a run-stuffing nose tackle that you could pick up in any draft and later on, and I was too high on him that year too. Cameron Irving was a huge bust at the 19th overall pick. Justin Gilbert with at eight overall. Johnny Manziel at 22nd overall. So that's back-to-back years with two first-round picks, okay? Danny Shelton and Cameron Irving, Justin Gilbert and Johnny Manziel. I mean, you're getting one starting caliber player out of those four first-round picks. Then the year before that, Barkevious Mingo in the first round, 6th overall, total bust.
Yikes.
Trent Richardson and Brandon Whedon in 2012, 2 total busts.
Yikes.
Phil Taylor in 2011. He was okay before the health problems, but again, a non-pass-rushing defensive tackle. Those guys you can find. Don't spend first-round high-caliber picks on him. Joe Hayden in 2010 was when the disaster ends, and Alex Mack 2009, they had one first-round pick each of those years. Joe Thomas in 2007, no first-round pick in 2008. So things were going fine. Joe Thomas, Alex Mack, Joe Hayden, boom, 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 hit on 3 first-round picks. Then all of a sudden, 2011, they draft, I mean, Phil Taylor ain't in the league anymore. Brandon Whedon, he's barely in the league. Trent Richardson ain't in the league. Barkevious Mingo, he did catch on in Indy, I think, but he might get caught again this offseason. Gilbert ain't in the league. Manziel ain't in the league. Cameron Irving was on his, like, third team, I think, maybe. I don't know. 2015 first-round pick, or the Chiefs just his second team? I can't remember. But anyway, he's a backup in the NFL. Danny Shelton, like I said, decent player. Corey Coleman, they've talked about trading him this offseason. Your first-round pick in 2016, the buzz is already out there. They're going to try and move him. So it is just really, really difficult to look at the Browns roster as it currently stands and look at their draft history and say, this is an organization you trust. Now, there's new people in place here, but how many? I mean, we just read through several different regimes and picks. You know, it just seems like
right.
We know the coaching has concerns, and it seems like things don't really change in Cleveland for whatever reason.
Yeah, so that brings us to kind of what we're talking about today. Like, top of the list, you know, we all just assume it's going to be quarterback, but
yep.
Is it fair to give up on Deshaun Kizer like that? Or do they have other needs in other places where, like, we just all assume it's quarterback at number one, but, I mean, like, could they very well be a team that's going to trade down to number one, acquire a bunch of first-round picks? Who knows?
They got to go get their guy, right? I mean, like,
if you don't believe that Kizer's not their guy, but do they? I don't.
They don't. Not with Hugh still in there. The way Hugh talked about him this year, I can't see that. I can't see them believing in him after. I mean, he was terrible. He ran him down all year, you know? Like, man, if that's how you treat the guy that you think is a future of your organization, I think. And plus, remember, we know they tried to trade for AJ McCarron, so they know they're not satisfied at that position. So I think they make a move for McCarron. I don't know what they'll have to give up to get him. I don't even know. I mean, McCarron's not even – he's played, and he's not really even been good when he played, so I'm not sure what the attraction is there. But, I mean, he's been okay. But anyway, they'll have to trade something for McCarron, and then I think they take somebody number one overall. Who that guy is going to be the big question. I know we have some mixed opinions on who should be on the table for them. Josh Allen's apparently on the table for them. You and I would disagree with that. But it's a great quarterback crop to have the first overall pick. There's no question about that, because there's a lot of years where I haven't felt like anybody was worthy of that spot. And this year, I definitely feel like Josh Rosen is. We've heard Baker Mayfield's in the mix for that position. So they have a ton of options, and quarterback's obviously a big need. But with number four, that's where the intrigue really starts, because we know they're going to take a quarterback number one, I think. But then who comes after that? You know what I mean? Like, the wide receiver group is disappointed, and there's still some level of uncertainty around Josh Gordon for sure. And if you move Corey Coleman, you don't have anything after those guys. So you need to find explosive weapons in the passing game. You don't have a go-to running back. Correll is about to be a free agent, like I said, and really hasn't been the answer for as long as he's been here now. Duke Johnson doesn't really project as an every down back. You gotta get a future at that position, right? I mean, if your offensive line, if they paid a lot of money for these guys, I think Betonio got extended. This is gonna be your group. You know, maybe a change is made at right tackle, but this is generally speaking gonna be your group. If that's the way you're willing to go into the season, and you're taking a quarterback first overall, don't running back and wide receiver and getting offensive weapons have to be pretty high priorities for this team?
Yeah, but is it at number four? I think it's a question.
Right.
Like how steep is that drop-off need, I think, is my big question. Because I just put out a mock draft today, which is Monday, and in it I have a couple of trades. And I do have Cleveland moving back with the Bills because Cleveland, I have Cleveland taking their quarterback at number one. But then when number four rolls around, I mean, I know Saquon Barkley's good, but like, How much better is Saquon Barkley than Darius Geis? How much better is Saquon Barkley than Sony Michel? How much better is Saquon Barkley than these other guys? Like, I know he's a workhorse, I get it, but number four overall, how steep is the drop off from the next guy? Because at that point, again, we're talking about maximizing a draft, something that I don't think the Browns do very well, and that they need to do really well this year. So,
I think it's likely trade out of number four. I really think it's likely. I mean, even if it's a spot or two,
I think so too. I had them moving back with Buffalo for one of their first round picks. I don't think they get both of those first round picks from Buffalo for number four. If it was for number one, sure, but I have them getting like a first and two to move up from number 21 to number four. So Buffalo ends up getting a quarterback at four that they like, and then the Browns get to. I have the Browns, I think, taking Sony Michel at number 21 or whatever, you know. And so it's like that to me is a good draft, picking whatever quarterback that you have number one, and then trading back, still getting a running back you really need, also getting other kinds of picks, you know. So
that might be
the priority for the. For the Browns.
Especially because if you look at the other big names in this draft, you know, running back, sure, but move down and get a good one, like you said, you know, that's a great move for them. If you get your quarterback at number one and you're able to move down, this is a team that's already, they've got their two defensive ends. You know, Emmanuel Ogba, he might not be a great pass rusher, but he's a terrific run defender, and he's playing like a high percent, one of the highest percentage of snaps of any defensive end in the league. Myles Garrett's going to be an every down guy. You know, you have those guys. You have other rotational guys like Carl Nassib and Nate Orchard. You don't really need to prioritize somebody like Bradley Chubb in this draft. Danny Shelton, you have your run stuffer. Larry Ogunjobi and Caleb Brantley have flashed a ton. Even if you move down, it's a decently grouped defensive line class. I don't know if you need Maurice Terce at number four. So they've kind of put themselves in a position now with Jamie Collins and Joe Schobert was a Pro Bowl. He got put in the Pro Bowl as a reserve or whatever. Christian Kirksey, you know, you have a good linebacking core. You don't need a linebacker. You know, you don't need to worry about Roquan Smith at that spot because that's what you, that's those picks that you have hit on have been on the defensive side of the ball, those mid-round picks, guys like, or at least they look like hits right now, like Ogunjobi and Christian Kirksey and Schobert in third, fourth round picks, and then bringing somebody in like Jamie Collins. You've prepared yourself, your front seven, to be really, really good without having to spend another high-end resource there. So I think they have to trust what they've done there. If there's one thing, the Browns have to start at some point trusting that they got talent at a certain position. They got talent there. Move back, you can focus on the secondary. Corners are going to probably be available in that range. You need corners. You know, the thing about the Browns is they don't have a gazillion needs, really. You know, they just have to find the drop-off at their good, from their good positions to their bad positions is so dramatic. And some of the bad positions are important.
It's all going to start gelling together the thing. Like, this is it's definitely a time thing for the Browns, but it can't be like we have everyone that we think we need. Now we're just going to kind of coast and wait for it to happen. Like, you have to continue to, stack, and you have to continue to build on it. And so I'm with you. I think that trading back is pretty smart. I mean, is Fitzpatrick the wild card if they stay at four?
He probably is. Yeah.
I mean, they can't draft Ridley at four, right? I don't think they're going to draft Ridley.
And I like Fitzpatrick a lot, but if you can collect some high end resources for moving back to 21 and you still get somebody like Sony Michel or
I'm with you.
A Calvin Ridley, you know, or some, you know.
They could get Calvin Ridley at 21, you know.
It's definitely possible. Absolutely possible. So I really think Cleveland will trade out of that number four spot, and Buffalo does seem like to try and get ahead of Denver and the Jets, that seems like a prime marriage there between those two. And they could get 21 and 22. They could get themselves a corner and a wide receiver for Buffalo moving up, you know? That's the thing I would keep for if you needed a defensive and a pass rusher, you know, because Chubb's going to be there and the drop-off is big after that. Even if you needed maybe a three technique, I would think about Hurst in that spot. I'm not sure in a vacuum he's worth that spot, but, you know, you can move down and still get a quality corner, and that's really what you need. And I like Minka Fitzpatrick a lot. You know, I would stay there maybe if linebacker were a huge need, because I think Roquan Smith might be the best player in the draft. But
I think so too. Yeah,
it's not a big need for this team. You know what I mean? They can survive with who they have at linebacker for sure. It's a great group. So I think we're both on the same page with this. With Cleveland, is just kind of maximizing the draft is super important, and being able to move down from that fourth spot is a big part of that, I think.
What about the Giants?
So the Giants are super interesting. So just looking at their team needs, I just feel like, you know, this is a team without a million holes that could be, you know, if Eli were to, you know, jump back to the top and, or even just be a solid quarterback this year, you know, with better coaching around him and putting players in better position to succeed. You have Odell, Sterling Shepard showed out last year, Evan Engram's a beast. You know, you can supplement that third wide receiver spot later in the draft. You can definitely find somebody. This is a group that has a lot of, you know, those kind of solid type receivers that you can find in the mid round. So not super worried about that. I know running back, everybody's going to talk about that being a huge need for the Giants, and it is, but it's not going to happen at number two, right?
I mean, it shouldn't.
Right, it shouldn't happen at number two. They have average talent there. They need to find a running back on day two. It shouldn't happen with the first pick in the draft, or the second pick in the draft. Just because I know we want to talk about the offensive line, just looking at the defensive side of things, Dalvin Tomlinson and Damon Harrison are your interior guys. They don't really care about pass rush from their interior guys because they always go to those nickel package type situations, you know, and put a guy inside like Avery Moss, who played really well for them last year, or Romeo Okwara. So they're set there. Olivier Vernon and Jason Pierre-Paul are making absolute bank there. I think both are overrated and the Giants overpaid for them, but doesn't matter. Those guys are their guys. They're going to stick with them. They also play like 93% of their snaps. It's totally insane what those guys play. So I don't think that you have any defensive line concerns or any thought of drafting a defensive line player in the first round. Linebacker, the Giants have never prioritized it. I don't think that's going to change. They just haven't done it. James Betcher's their DC now. He may have some input on some things. Gettleman, you know, it's a different regime for sure. And the interesting part about this is that Gettleman, at least for Sean McDermott's defense, did kind of prioritize linebacker. Remember, they had Kuechly and they had Thomas Davis, and they still took Shaq Thompson in the first round. So that adds an interesting wrinkle to it where Roquan Smith could potentially come into play. And he's an unbelievable football player and he's going to kill the combine. So that's going to be part of this for sure. So I jumped the gun a little bit there. But linebacker at number two overall with an elite quality quarterback on the board, if it is Rosen there and they love him or somebody else, a quarterback, that makes it tough because you're going to want to build for the long-term future with a new coach and a new GM. Yeah, they're going to be like, yeah, Eli Manning, it's great to have him for a transition, but eventually he can be a trade piece. Bring in a quarterback, we could just reap, you know, benefits back over. I just don't know how you argue with the value of a quarterback at number two. In this draft, especially with who could be on the board, I just think it's a no-brainer for the Giants.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to justify a running back at number two, even though they kind of need it.
Yeah.
I think it's... Yeah, I mean, like, what is your cornerback situation like, too? Like,
yeah, it's weird because a year ago you'd have been like, this might be the best cornerback group in the league. And then Janoris Jenkins had a terrible season. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie got benched because of attitude concerns. He could be very well on his way out. Eli Apple had all kinds of issues throughout the season. And, you know, even though he's a first-round pick, there's been talk about him being gone. So cornerback could be a huge need for this team.
Right.
I don't think it gets addressed at number two, but it's probably a need early in the second for sure.
Again, it depends, and depends on what these teams want to do in this top four, because I think this top four is going to be rich with teams who are looking to move up for a quarterback, and so I think that there's a chance you could get, I don't, maybe a team like the Jets who want to move up for a quarterback. They're sitting at number 15. Yep. They can move up. That's not too far in the draft. Then at that point, you're sitting at number 15. You're the Giants. Maybe there's a quarterback still left on the board that you want to take a chance on, but maybe not. Maybe you could pick up Denzel Ward, a Jair Alexander, something like that. You know, that's a much better scenario, I think, than reaching for any other position other than a quarterback. I love the idea of drafting a quarterback, especially one of these good ones, especially Rosen, perhaps. Maybe even Darnold, because he gets to sit behind Eli Manning, and that'll be fine. I like the idea of that. That's probably my favorite idea for the Giants. But if not, I'm a fan of them trading back with the Jets, maybe with Arizona. I'm sorry, I said the Jets are 15. Arizona's at 15.
Right.
Maybe with Arizona, that's a team there. And you can pick up, I think, a pretty solid lockdown kind of a corner that you might really be needing next season. Maybe even getting your hands on a running back. Who knows? Geis, Michelle, whatever, if you're in the 20s or in the late teens. I like that idea a little bit better. So I think it's quarterback or trade back for the Giants. I really do.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I would really strongly emphasize, man, because here's what the Giants can do. They can take a quarterback, especially if it's somebody like Rosen that I'm super high on. You can bring him in, and you're going to see right away this guy can be a guy that starts. They can flip Eli Manning like Sam Bradford got flipped. I mean, Eli Manning's way less injury history than Sam Bradford. You know, like, he might be a tiny bit older, but teams, I mean, this guy's won the Super. This guy's done the thing. And Sam Bradford got a first-round pick. Like, man, I think you could get something for Eli Manning still. In this desperate NFL with teams desperate at the position, I think you could get something for Eli Manning, and I think you could get a better player potentially. Maybe not immediately, but it's not going to take Rosen long, man. He's going to be a good one. And I think you could flip Eli Manning, start Josh Rosen, get yourself in position to build something even greater around Rosen in the next year's draft, and then be a force in 2019.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so.
That's how I handle my resources. Who we got? Colts.
Colts are the last one today, right?
Yes, and did anybody inherit more of a straight disaster than Chris Ballard? I mean, his roster, dude. Go ahead, pick where you want. I mean, Dante Moncrief's a free agent who's done nothing. T.Y. Hilton's their only threat on offense. They need something there. Jack Doyle, Indianapolis, they think Jack Doyle's a good player because they don't have anybody else to throw the ball. You know, Jack Doyle's a number two tight end. You know, they think he could be one of their top guys next year just because it's been so long since they saw anything quality. I don't know, man. The offensive line, you got Costanzo. Ryan Kelly's going to be your center. Right guard, right tackle, left guard, severely they need help. It's not LaRaven Clark. It's not Joe Haig. Great options for them, third and fifth rounds, whatever. They're trying to see if it works, but it hasn't worked. Those guys have gotten some opportunity. Got to somehow address running back. I know Marlon Mack, you're probably going to say he's the guy for the future. I have a little more doubts than you. Frank Gore's a free agent. I don't know what's going to happen with him or if he retires or what. But I mean, let's be honest. You could talk about all those things for Indy, but the linebacking core is the worst in the league. They have no pass rushers whatsoever. Jonathan Hankins is their only front seven player. Al Woods is okay. You know, you got some guys that are run stuffers you can find every year, but in terms of impact guys, you don't have anybody on the defensive front. You know, high impact players, nobody on the defensive front.
Yeah, no, the Colts roster is pretty barren, and they're, I think that it has to be a trench pick. I think this one's got to be. It's got to be one of a few things. It's got to be either be the right trade down, if again, you know, because we're going to talk about that as a possibility for every team that's in the top four. So it's either the right fit for a trade down, meaning I don't want them to go too far. You know, I'm really thinking either Broncos, Jets, something, because the Buccaneers at number seven have the same needs as Indianapolis. So if they get behind seven, the Bucs are taking one of their guys. And then Chicago might as well. So if they trade back too far, then all of a sudden they're just acquiring potential assets and not enough real assets. And so if they stick with number three, I think that Bradley Chubb or Quentin Nelson are going to be the pick for this team. I think it's got to be one of those two dudes. I'd like Roquan. Them getting Roquan is nice. Their linebackers are bad, but like it's got to be close to trench play, I think, for the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie that Nelson and Roquan Smith and, heck, Calvin Ridley and Minka Fitzpatrick, I mean, all those guys would be huge for this team. You know, they don't have any – I mean, all those spots are positions in need. I think they're all culture changers, but I really think Bradley Chubb is the guy. Like, I would almost say that it's almost a disappointment if they don't get Bradley Chubb out of this, because he's clearly, hands down, not even close, the best edge pass rusher in this class. They do not have anybody there. I mean, maybe development-wise, Terrell Basham you've hoped for, but, I mean, you just don't have anything that's exciting off the edge. Got to get a player like that. Pair him with Jabal Sheard and Terrell Basham, and all of a sudden those guys, you know, they're your twos and threes, and they're in roles that they can maybe win in a little bit better. But you got to get – and he's a culture changer. Chubb is nasty. He's aggressive. He's physical. He's going to bring a demeanor to the locker room. And Roquan probably does that too, and Minka for sure probably does that. And, you know, you have a lot of those kind of options, but Chubb plays the high-value position. I want to come away with him. Ideal situation for the Colts, they start hearing people are, you know, trying to get up to number four for the Brown spot. Hey, Denver. Hey, Jets. Do you guys want to get jumped by the Bills? Because that's what's about to happen. So, you know, you better get a move on and try and get up here to number three. They bump down. Bills trade up. Quarterback. And then you have the Colts sitting there at number five, collected assets, and they're able to get a pass rusher like Bradley Chubb or one of those other game changers. That's an ideal situation. Now, I don't know if it plays out that way for the Colts, you know. But I think that's what we could see, because that four spot is going to be – I mean, everybody's going to be trying to buy into that spot, and everybody's going to be trying to buy into three too. But I would be a lot less – I would be a lot more reluctant to move down if I were the Colts. I know they need tons of picks, but, man, if you can get Bradley Chubb, like that's a great pick in this draft, because I don't see it as the deepest draft, and trading back to 21-22 for me when you need a pass rusher as badly as they do, that doesn't do as much for me. So they're going to have some options, but it's hard for me to get away from Chubb. I just – feel like he's the guy for this team.
I think it's D-line first, O-line second, linebacker third.
I mean, they have concerns in the secondary too, because we know Quincy Wilson and Malik Hooker, I don't know, man, their future might not be that bright. So
I'm going to fight you. I'm going to fist fight you the next time I see you because of that comment.
Just kidding. That might be the only spot that they're actually feeling decent about is free safety. And
now Chuck Pagano's trash coach philosophy is out of the door. Maybe Quincy Wilson will actually play.
They really don't have anybody ahead of him at this point that's even rosterable. So it's more likely to happen, I think, at this point. But yeah, those two guys, they got to get return on those two picks for sure. That's huge for the Ballard regime. So there's kind of your breakdown of the top four spots. We'll continue doing this with team needs and offseason outlooks and twisting it to the draft, you know, giving you kind of some of an idea as to, you know, where these teams could be headed with their draft process. We've got what? Next, tomorrow on the show, we got Denver. We've got the Jets. We've got the Bears. Oh, no, the Bucks and the Bears in that order. Are you ready to talk about your Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I am. I'm more than ready.
There we go. That's what we'll have next. We'll continue moving through the teams, breaking down free agency, draft, offseason outlooks for all of them. Until then, you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.